Welcome back to Give Us More. I'm Neve.
I'm Megan.
And today is our second attempt at recording this episode.
Cause my Wi-Fi broke the last time.
And then my headphones died. That was an eventful evening.
It really was. I went to bed then afterwards. I was lying there like, I hate my life. Give Us Morg is officially cursed. Welcome to the cursed podcast.
Is it an episode of Give Us Morg? If there's no technical difficulties, you bet your bottom dollar it's not.
That's right. That is right. Yeah.
So last week we talked about Arthur.
Arthur Shawcross. Yes. The womanizer, the man eater, the rock fighter. Rock fighter champion of the 60s or 70s.
Rock fighter champion 77.
Yep, that's him.
He was playing with rocks and then was like shocked that he got a concussion.
Yeah. Oh, what? Brain injuries? Are you crazy? Are you insane? What? This is a safe game. They play it in the Olympics, yeah. Actually.
It's an Olympic sport. So if you haven't checked it out, you should do so. Either after this episode or go back and listen to it and then come back to this one, whatever floats your boat. So today's episode is extremely rough. Megan is not looking forward to it. She heard bits. She heard enough of it, I think, before her Wi-Fi gave out last time.
I heard enough of it for a lifetime, actually. So, yeah, you know what? Let's just talk about our favorite childhood games this week. Mine, personally, like Arthur, was the rock throwing. And then discus as well. Yeah, what about you?
Cluedo.
Okay, that's fitting. That is very fitting.
Simpsons Hit and Run.
Simpsons Hit and Run. See, isn't this so much nicer than talking about this person we're about to talk about?
Yeah, no, it really is. I'm sorry to ruin your evening, everybody. But I do want to quickly say that there is some graphic detail and some stories, including children. So if that's too heavy for you, please make sure you click out and you can either fast forward to where it ends. I'll always give a little, this is where it's about to start, so that you can either fast forward it and not have to listen to it, or just simply click out and maybe this episode won't be for you. But that's perfectly fine to set boundaries.
Abso-freaking-lutely.
I am still learning, hence why I researched this douche.
I would regret having to research this one big time.
So, like, the cases are hard, but also his poetry is fucking hilarious. So,
ooh, okay. Can we do like a dramatic reading of the poetry?
Oh, girl, you know I have
some. I'm gonna add like special music in the background too. Oh, give it the Give Us Morg touch. Yes.
So, in case you haven't figured it out by now, today's episode is BTK.
It's just Dennis.
It's just Dennis. Dennis Lynn. Dennis Lynn Rader.
Miss Lynn!
So, we'll just jump right on in. Dennis Lynn Rader was born March 9th, 1945 in Pittsburgh, Kansas. He grew up in Wichita with his parents, Dorothea and William. He was the couple's firstborn son out of four children altogether, and his younger brothers were Jeff, Paul and Bill.
Sounds like a very vanilla family.
It really does, doesn't it? Dorothea, William, Dennis, Jeff, Paul and Bill.
Jeff, Paul, Bill, get in here. Dennis.
And then Dennis is like, I'm different.
Dennis is a kid who's just swinging by himself in the playground, kicks other kids when they come near him.
I'm different. His father was a gas and electricity employee at KG&E, and his mother was a bookkeeper. His parents were always busy working, and Dennis described that he felt ignored by his parents. mostly though by his mother.
Yeah, let's right here not blame mothers for their kids' fuck-ups. Unless it's been, you know, a severely bad childhood.
Unless you're like Charles Manson and your mother, like, you know,
sells you for a pitcher of beer.
Then fair enough, you can blame her somewhat.
I mean, but Dorothea, I mean, she had like, what, three other kids?
She had three other kids and like was working.
Yeah, she's a working gal. She doesn't have time to be giving you all of the attention you're looking for, Dennis.
And like, so she's three kids, she's a husband, and she has a job. Well, she's four kids, sorry. Forgot about Dennis there for a sec. She has four kids, she's a job, she's a husband. Like, she's a household to run on top of trying to earn money to keep the roof over her children's heads. And he's like, you don't love me. So he resented both his father and mother for, like, you know, leaving him feeling that way. But for some reason, he was major pressed about his mother. Like, oh, yeah, my dad ignores me. It's shitty. But my mother.
Dorothea, how could you?
He attended Riverview Middle School and he then graduated from Wichita Heights High School in 1963. Dennis claimed that from an early age he would have fantasies about bondage, control and torture.
Ew.
Because he's different.
He's disturbed.
Well, yes, he is disturbed. Oh, wah.
Sorry, I had to. Wah.
Let's get down with the sickness.
Get up, come on, get down with the sickness.
When he was a teenager, he would kill cats, dogs, and any other animal, basically, he could find. And he would often hang them or strangle them.
Okay, so he's strangling animals as he's hanging a cat. He's like, why doesn't mama love me? This is why, Dennis. This is why.
Maybe have a hard look in the mirror at yourself, boy. Dennis was good at masking his disturbing behavior, and people would often actually describe him as quiet and a polite young man. And some of his friends described him as, yes, he lacked a sense of humor, but he was studious and focused. So, like, they were like, he knew what he wanted out of life.
Yes, to kill cats and blame his mother for all of his shortcomings. Anyway, how does he not have a sense of humor, but he has friends? All right, I have worked on my sense of humor since I was like 7, because I only had that to rely on. I was not a pretty kid, okay? I was really weird. I had to rely on my sense of humor.
Oh, yeah, no. The humor is what got me through school. When he graduated from high school, Dennis got himself some jobs. Just menial jobs. Just, you know, like, he worked in the local supermarket and, like, nothing major. And then in the fall of 1965, he went off to Kansas Wesleyan College in Salina. I don't know how to say it, I'm sorry.
He went to college. It just, yeah.
After two semesters there, he dropped out and joined the Air Force at the age of 21 in 1966. He completed his basic training in San Antonio, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I said it right the first time and I confused myself. He completed it in San Antonio, Texas. He spent time all over the globe during active duty. He was in Korea, Greece, Turkey, and Tokyo. One of his friends in the force said that Dennis was just one of the guys and he blended in with everyone. Like, you would not know that later on in life he would be such a psychopath.
Fair.
Probably just talked about his mother all the time.
Oh God, there's this girl, her name is like Dorothea. She was kind of like a bitch to me. Like, don't you agree, like, as a man, that like women are just bitches? Yeah, you're right. Okay, she's my mom. Fucking got you.
We have now decided that Dennis was an emo.
Yes.
He was, okay. MC or all the way. He was... He was discharged from active duty in the summer of 1970, and he moved back home to Wichita. And within less than a year, on May 22nd, 1971, Dennis married Paula Dietz. Paula was from the same town, and she attended the same high school. She was just a few years younger, and I don't know, she saw something in Dennis. Wouldn't have said he was an attractive man.
He's not an attractive man. He has no sense of humor.
Just complains about his mom. And he can't even keep down a job.
Yeah, that's another thing.
The pair moved into a house in Park City, which was near where Dennis had grown up. The couple would then go on to have two children. Dennis enrolled in Butler County Community College in El Dorado, and he went on to get an associate's degree in electronics in 1973. Dennis then went to Wichita State University, where he attended night school. It's unclear if Dennis had a learning disability, but he did struggle a lot, especially with spelling and grammar. So he was never tested for anything. But I think, like, if you were to look at, you know, his assignments that he handed in and stuff like that, you could probably tell that he wasn't, like, as further on as he should be, because by this stage he's, like, 20-odd.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no mention, well, I couldn't find any mention of it from, like, his school years, so I don't know. For the most part, Dennis was unemployed. As Dennis became more bored from his unemployment, his fantasies of strangling someone just became stronger and stronger.
Get a job.
No.
Ugh. You sicken me.
So I will say just from here that this is probably the worst one out of all of his, like, murders and everything like that. And it does include children, so if this is not for you, I would skip till the next story if you wanted to. So, in January 1974, Dennis was driving Paula to and from work at the time. She didn't like to drive in the winter because it was really dark out and snowy and icy, so he would drive her to and from work. And he was starting to look for someone that he could strangle to fulfill his fantasy. He would just, like, he'd drop Paula off and he would just go down random neighborhoods or school campuses, and he would follow women to observe them. And Dennis liked to call this trolling. He would fantasize about torturing and killing the women he was trolling, and this would make him orgasm, which Dennis liked to call a sparky big time.
Even bigger, ew.
You heard it here first, everybody. This man approaching his 30s is calling his orgasms a sparky big time to my pants.
It reminds me of Napoleon Dynamite.
The sparky big time to my pants.
You could say it's getting pretty serious, the sparky big time to my pants.
Yeah, you could say it's getting pretty serious. Yeah, it's pretty serious.
That was really good, Niamh.
It's one of my favorite movies. Napoleon, you're just jealous. I'm sitting here chatting online with babes.
That's what I say to Niall when I'm talking to you and I'm recording. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, you're just jealous. I'm sitting here talking to babes.
I am said babe. So then one day, Dennis came across Julie Otero, 33, and her daughter Josephine, 11. He found them both beautiful and decided that he just needed to torture them. He began watching them, and he watched them for, like, I think he watched them for a few weeks to kind of, you know, learn their routine and stuff. On January 15th, 1974, Dennis gathered a kit of sorts with cords he had pre-tied, knives, a gun, and any other tool he thought or figured he would need in his attack. And Dennis liked to call this a hit kit.
Okay, you're not original, all right? Israel Keyes did, like, the same thing.
Dennis is a fool, and to be honest, how he successfully murdered people is baffling.
One of life's mysteries.
Then at around 8:20 a.m., he went around to the Otero house. So he parked his car like a few blocks away and then walked so his car would not be seen outside the home. He went around to the backyard and cut their phone lines. And his plan was that he was going to walk into the house and he was going to tell them he was a criminal who had just escaped prison and all he wanted was money and their car. However, when he got into the backyard of the Otero home, he saw dog prints in the snow and he hadn't planned on them having a dog. You know, dogs make noise, so he was like, shit. When he saw that they did have a dog, because he wasn't planning on it, he almost left.
You should have just left. This is why. Get a dog, guys. Just get a dog.
I want a dog so bad. Anyways. Dennis walked into the Otero home, and to his shock, Julie's husband, Joseph, who was 38, was home. He wasn't supposed to be. He was supposed to be at work. However, Joseph had been in a car accident and had cracked a rib, so he wasn't able to work. So Dennis had to adjust his plan. Dennis pointed his gun in Joseph's face and told him to put the dog outside. He thought it was a joke at first and that he was being set up by his brother-in-law. So this is from Dennis. Quote, after I got into the house, I lost control of it. I basically panicked. Right. After Joseph realized that it was indeed not a joke, he got the dog and he put the dog outside. Dennis then tied up Joseph, Julie, Josephine, and their youngest son, Joey, who was 9. He used first aid tape from his hit kit to tie them all up. The family complained about the tape hurting, so Dennis actually went and got clothesline cord and retied everyone up so that they'd be slightly more comfortable.
How kind.
He then also put a cushion underneath Mr. Otero for his cracked rib.
As a serial killer, I think that you have no empathy or sympathy for anybody. Mm-hmm. Empathy would be more the word. So why are you doing nice things like making them comfortable?
So when he did, like, after Mr. Otero put the dog outside, he was like, I'm an escaped criminal. I just need your money and your car. And they were like, okay, like, we don't got any money, but okay. And he was like, I just need to tie you up so I can, mm-hmm. you know, rummage the house for the money and take your car. That's all. Like, and he was like, that's all I'm gonna do. Like, no need to panic. So they kind of almost went along with it because they were like, if we just do what this man asks, he'll just take our car and leave because that's what he's telling us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dennis then gagged the whole family. He then began to strangle Mr. Otero. Quote, I'd never strangled before. Didn't realize how long it took. The victim was fighting. End quote. He then went on to strangle Mrs. Otero. Once she quit moving, I let pressure up. He then went to strangle Josephine and she asked what was going on. I told her I put her parents to sleep and you're next. End quote. No.
I have no words for that.
Joey then had got up and was moving about the room and Mr. Otero regained his consciousness and then so did Mrs. Otero. So like everything is just going wrong at this point for Dennis. So Dennis then decided to put a plastic bag over their heads to suffocate them. He put a bag over Joey's head and Mrs. Otero watched sobbing. Quote, she pleaded with me to stop. Dennis then went over to Mrs. Otero and before he killed her, she said, quote, may God have mercy on your soul. Dennis then killed her. Dennis then killed Joseph, Mr. Otero, in the same manner. There was a chair in Joey's room and police had speculated at the time that he sat in the chair to watch Joey die, but Dennis has denied those claims. Quote, I think I used the chair to subdue him while I was doing something else. And he also went on like this big mad rant where he was like, they were just saying that to make me look worse.
You already look awful.
The worst part, Mr. Dennis. Okay. So Dennis then took Josephine down to the basement of the house. He took her down to the basement of the house and he strangled her until she was unconscious. He hung her from a pipe. Quote, I removed her pants, pulled her panties down, either cut or tore her bra open, exposing her breasts, then pulled her knit shirt back down. I retied her ankles and knees and attached the rope to her wrists. He had her lying on the floor whilst he did all that, and then he put Josephine's head in the noose that he had pre-made. Quote, I was overwhelmed with excitement. I touched her and masturbated. I'm sorry for those words that left my mouth. I'm sorry. Dennis claimed that police made out that he was reviving the family to prolong the family's torture, but it was in fact that he didn't realise how hard it was to kill an actual person, because before this he had only been killing, like, small animals. Dennis then cleaned up the family home, got himself a glass of water, stole a watch that belonged to Mr. Otero and took some other random items, and then he also turned Mrs. Otero's bag upside down on the kitchen table to, like, rummage through it. And I think he took her driver's license. There was no mention if he did on her or not. He then turned up the thermostat because he had read on the internet that... Would it have been the internet? Probably.
Yeah, I'd say so.
He read somewhere, anyway, that if you turned up the thermostat, that would, the heat would mess with the time of death. And then he took the family's car to a local supermarket. He threw the keys of the car onto the roof of the supermarket and headed towards his own car. When he got to his own car, however, he realized that he had left behind his knife at the Otero home. So Dennis got in his car, drove to the Otero house, and lo and behold, he found it in their garden.
In their garden. Mm-hmm. He's that much of an idiot, he just left it in their garden.
Yep. Dennis then went on about his day as if nothing had happened. The Oteros had three other children, and they were at school at the time of the murders. So when they finished school, they got home, and they were the ones that sadly found their family.
What a horrifying experience.
I will say, thankfully, from what research I've done, they only saw their mother and father. They never saw their younger brother or their younger sister. Because the younger brother was in his room and the younger sister was down in the basement.
Yeah.
Like, as horrible, obviously, as it is, thankfully they never got to see their sister in that manner.
Yeah. The same with their brother. That's horrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're the ones that called 911 and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis went into the woods after the murders of the Otero family, and he burned all notes and sketches that he had made of his plans to go to the house and kill them. Yeah, so he didn't want any evidence to be able to link him to the crimes.
As most criminals don't, but I mean, it's Dennis, so he probably made a big deal out of that.
Well, he did this because he had researched other serial killers and he learned that most of them kept souvenirs, and that's how most of them had been caught. So mm-hmm. He was like, I'm not going to make the same mistakes, except Dennis made the same mistakes. So,
idiot.
He kept a journal that had newspaper articles on the murders, and he did have souvenirs that he had taken from crimes that he committed. He commonly, like more commonly, took their driver's license for some weird reason. And he had like a hiding spot in his shed. And I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. He liked to call these hidey hole files.
Does he want to be a serial killer or does he want to be Dr. Seuss?
It's a very, very good question. Then in April 1974, Dennis saw Catherine Bright, 21, as she was walking into her rented home in Wichita. He was like, I'm a troll you for a while. On April 4th, 1974, after watching her, Dennis decided it was time. He broke into her home through the back porch and he hid in her bedroom because she wasn't home. His plan was to tie her up naked and then strangle her to death. But his plan was once again disrupted. Catherine arrived home at 2 p.m. with her brother, Kevin, 19. As the pair walked into the... He could hear them, like, as they were getting out of the car. And he was like, shit, there's two of them. There's only supposed to be her. So as the two of them walked into the house, together. They closed the door behind them, and Dennis emerged from the bedroom with a gun in his hand. He'd startled the two of them and somehow managed to gain control and brought them to the back bedroom. Dennis had Kevin tie Catherine up with nylon stockings from Catherine's drawers, and then he tied Kevin up to the bedpost. Dennis then decided that he wanted to move Catherine into a different bedroom, and he tied her to a chair in there. He turned the radio on and turned the volume up full blast, and he then went back into Kevin. He began strangling Kevin, as he wanted to be able to take his time with Catherine. He was like, get Kevin out of the way. I'll have Catherine all to myself. Like a weirdo. However, Kevin managed to break free from his ties and began fighting Dennis.
Go, Kevin.
Kevin is... I'm amazed, okay? And you will be too.
Legend.
Dennis took out his gun and he shot Kevin in the face and left him for dead, returning his main focus back to Catherine. As he began strangling Catherine, she began to break free from her ties and she started to put up a fight. By this time, Kevin had gotten up from the other room and went in to save his sister. He managed to fight the gun out of Dennis's hand and he tried to shoot, but the gun got jammed.
Now,
Dennis claimed the gun jammed because he stuck his finger in it.
No, Dennis, baby, that's not how they work, Miss Lynn.
Yeah, he was like, I just, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, stopped the bullet with my own finger.
Dennis got his gun back and he shot Kevin in the head. This time he was certain Kevin was dead. He went back to Catherine and decided that he was just going to give up on strangulation, and he just began to stab her. Quote, I lost control. No fucking shit, you lost control miles back, bro. You lost control miles back.
Lost control to the point where you specifically picked up your knife and you specifically stabbed her multiple times.
He stabbed Catherine between the ribs, as he had read in a magazine that if you hit between the ribs, you would pierce the lungs or the heart faster. While Dennis was stabbing Catherine, Kevin got up one final time. He's been shot in the head twice now. He got up one final time and he made a beeline for the front door, opening it, making his way outside whilst screaming for help.
Wow.
In a panic, Dennis starts to clean up as much as he can.
No, oh, we're going to get company over. Oh, no. Let me just grab this. Oh, you got a rag?
Do you know that? Is it Nicki Minaj or someone who's like, hop, 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 and it's like people running around cleaning? That's
it's like a hum, zoom, boom, zoom,
zoom. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's Dennis. He's running around like a fucking loon. Dennis accidentally cut himself on the leg and left behind his blood.
Oh my God.
He tried to steal Catherine's car, but he picked up the wrong keys. He picked up Kevin's car keys. So at this point, he's just like, fuck it. And he just ran out the back door and headed towards where he knew his car was parked. Dennis managed to get himself home, cleaned up, and hide all of his evidence before his wife got home from work. How, I will not know. Police eventually arrive at Catherine's home and she's able to give the police some information before she passed out, and then she was rushed to hospital and underwent surgery for her 11 stab wounds. Sadly, she died during her operation as it was just clearly too much. Kevin, though, did survive and he gave the police as much information as possible on his attacker.
Go, Kevin. Go, Kevin.
Soon after this, a group of men came forward talking about how they knew who had killed the Otero family. The police began to suspect the three men, and this really infuriated Dennis. He didn't want anyone else getting the credit for the murders that he had committed. So on October 22nd, 1974, Dennis called Don Granger, who was a member of the editorial board for the Wichita Eagle newspaper. He masked his voice and he told Don that there was a letter at the public library inside a specific book and, you know, you should go get it because I hear it's from the murderer. So Don was like, yeah, sure, I'll definitely go get that. And then rang the police and was like, you might want to go to the library because somebody just told me. Yeah, I'm not going to go. You police officers may go. So they did, and naturally they found this letter. Are you ready?
Oh, okay. Is this a dramatic reading? A dramatic excerpt?
Yeah, it's a dramatic letter, I would say.
Okay.
Those three dude you have in custody are just talking to get publicity. They know nothing at all. I did it by myself and no one's help. That's how it started. Those three dude.
Oh, there was actually no S at the end of that.
No, there was actually no S at the end of that. Dennis goes on to give like immense detail about the murders that nobody knew. So they're like, okay, well, he obviously is, because nobody knows this information. I'm sorry this happened to the society. It's hard to control myself. You probably call me psychotic with sexual perversion hang up. Where this monster enter my brain, I will never know, but it here to stay. How does one cure himself? If you ask for help that you killed four people, they will laugh or hit the panic button and call the cops. I can't stop, so the monster goes on and hurt me as well as the society. Society can be thankful that there are ways for people like me to relieve myself at time by dead day dreams of some victim being torture and being mine. It is big complicated game, my friend, of the monster plague, putting victims number down, follow them, check up on them, waiting in the dark, waiting, waiting. The pressure is great, and sometimes he run the game to his liking. Maybe you can stop him. I can't. He has already chosen his next victim or victims. I don't know who they are yet. The next day after I read the paper, I will know. But it's too late. Good luck hunting. Yours truly, guiltily. P.S. Since sex criminals do not change their M.O. by nature or do not do so, I will not change mine. The code word for me will be bind them, torture them, kill them. BTK. You see, this is a P.S. by the way. This is like, you see, there will be one next victim.
Okay, so first of all, none of that made sense. All right, Lynn. Okay, secondly, you say you've already chosen your victim, but you don't know who they are. We're not doing this, you're two different people thing. All right, we're not doing it today. All right, we're never doing it.
It's a no from me, Dennis. It's a no from me.
You'd be kicked out of the poetry slam club for real.
He also sends a letter, which I do have further down in my notes, but he does send a letter where he's like, if you don't like BTK, I have other options. Okay, guys?
It's still, you know what? You should have taken notes from the X-Men of New Orleans.
I have it here. So he then does go on and he proceeds to give options for his nicknames if they didn't like BTK. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Obviously, you have bind them, torture them, kill them, BTK. BTK Strangler, the Wichita Strangler.
Okay.
The Poetic Strangler.
Ooh, that sounds like you should be wearing a turtleneck and hiding out in alleyways. Smoking a cigarette.
Love it. The Bondage Strangler. The Bondage Psycho. The Wichita Hangman.
There's a lot of options here. I was not expecting this.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not done. The Wichita Executioner, the Asphyxiator, or the Garrote Phantom. He doesn't even use garrotes, can I just?
Yeah, I was just about to say, you don't use garrotes, Lynn. Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he gave them that option.
Okay. All right. I actually have no words for this.
So Dennis then actually found himself a job in installing security alarms in November.
Yeah, this makes me violently ill.
Yeah, he got himself a job because there was a big, people were now like, holy shit, we've got a killer on our hands. We all now need alarm systems. The killer knows how to install them, so.
Yeah, ew. All of the ew.
In July 1975, Dennis and his wife Paula welcomed their son, Brian. Dennis was working full-time, he was part-time at college, and he was now taking care of a newborn. So he was like, I'm much too busy to kill. However, he did still stalk women or troll women. Then in 1977, Paula was pregnant again with the couple's second child, and Dennis decided that he was ready to find his next victim. On March 17th, 1977, after Dennis failed to gain access to a house, he saw a young boy walking home from the supermarket and, quote, "I figured he had a mother in the house. I had a picture in my wallet of my wife and baby, so I used it to pretend I was looking for them. I asked him if he had seen them. I knew he wouldn't know them. He told me he didn't. I watched where he went. Now I wish I hadn't used that family picture."
I wonder why. I wonder why.
I mean, too late now, Dennis. You already used it like an asshole.
No, you make awful decisions day in, day out. Every single decision that you've made in your life is just terrible.
Dennis then knocked on the door and pretended to be a private investigator. He had a briefcase in his hand, which was actually his hit kit. The boy and his brother answered the door, and Dennis just bullied his way in. The boy's mother, Shirley Vian, 24, came out to the commotion. He told Shirley he had problems with sexual fantasies and that he was going to tie her up. Quote, "I pulled the blinds and turned off the TV and said I would tie up the kids first." Dennis put the three kids in the bathroom and he shut the door, as they wouldn't stop crying, shockingly. As Dennis tied Shirley up, she got sick, so Dennis got her a glass of water and comfort her. Quote, "This compassion runs in most of my crimes."
And are we supposed to applaud you for that?
You're so compassionate, murdering innocent people.
Yeah, go die in a fucking hole.
He then tied Shirley's legs to the bed and he put her hands behind her back. He then put a bag over her head and strangled her. Dennis then took her underwear and left the kids in the bathroom. He just left them there. Dennis liked to take the underwear of female victims so he could later wear them to relive the crime.
Yeah.
Quote, "I would don the victim's underwear, slips, panties, hosiers, sexy house coats." What is a sexy house coat? I don't know. "I would wear a wig and sometimes a mask and put myself into bondage as if I were the victim and finally do self-gratification."
Yeah, I've seen those photos.
Yeah, I've seen them too. It's
Why don't you take photos of yourself doing it?
My nosiness got the better of me and I was like, I need to see these pictures. And then I was like, oh. And now I can't sleep at night. So, you know.
They're really bad. They're really, really bad. But yeah, no, like when you look it up, if you do look it up, guys, I'm not telling you to look it up because.
No, I'm not telling you to look it up because, you know, that will just honestly, that will disturb you.
Oh, but it's like he is not like. Like doing anything to himself, it being fucking weird.
It literally is just him being a fucking psycho, like nothing else to it.
Did they have timers on these kinds of photos? How did he do that?
I don't. Yeah, there must have been. He must have owned like a proper camera, like.
Oh yeah, he went out one day and he was like, "You know what I need?"
My next sentence is he would sometimes take pictures of this. Shirley's sons eventually managed to get free from the bathroom and they ran to their neighbours and called 911. Shirley was found naked and face down on the bed. The kids were sadly too young and too scared to give any sort of description of Dennis.
Aww.
The two boys were only 6 and 8 and there was a younger sister and I'm not quite sure what age she was. I read she was 2 but I don't know because it was only like one place that said it. She could have been slightly older but she wouldn't have been much older.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis then wrote a poem about the crime called "Shirley Locks, Shirley Locks, Will Thou Be Mine? Thou shall not scream, not yet feel the line, but lay on a cushion and think of me in death, and now it is going to be."
Yeah, yeah. You're not a good poet. You're no Shakespeare.
Nope.
No Shakespeare.
Then on December 8th, 1977, after stalking several women, he chose his next victim, Nancy Fox, 25. Dennis knocked on the door to make sure no one was home before he went around to the back and cut her phone lines. He then broke into her apartment and waited for her to arrive home. Nancy arrived home and was extremely startled, naturally, to see Dennis just chilling in her. I think he was literally like just sitting in her kitchen, like drinking a glass of water.
Ew.
He told her he had a sexual issue and that he needed to tie her up. He said he was going to take some photos and he was going to rape her, but he wasn't going to kill her. Nancy reportedly said, quote, let's get this over with so I can call the police.
Damn, Nancy. All right, go girl.
Now, Dennis said that once she said that, he was like, oh, now I have to kill her. Like, he wasn't going to.
Yeah, don't victim blame, you piece of shit.
Dennis undressed himself and he told Nancy to do the same. But she kept like a nightdress on, I think, of some sort. He went to remove it and she asked that he didn't, so he let her keep it on. And he left the bedroom door open for her as well. He then tied up Nancy on the bed and asked if she, quote, ever had sex in the butt with her boyfriend.
Ew.
This was like as a form of torture to her, like a form of mental torture to make her believe that he was about to rape her. And then Dennis began strangling Nancy and started telling her, I'm BTK. I was a bad guy.
Okay. Was? I mean, you're kind of in the middle of an act of murder, but all right.
Cool. According to Dennis, he then took some of her belongings and turned up the temperature in her apartment before eventually leaving. Dennis didn't give Nancy's jewelry to his wife because, quote, that would be too cruel, but I might have given it to my daughter.
No. Mm-hmm. I feel so sorry for his daughter. Like, she's very active on social media and everything. She's a book. Fair play to her.
Mm-hmm. Both children, obviously, you know, they're much older when he's caught, and like they were honestly stunned.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were like, not our dad, like what?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he would be, but like,
yeah.
Yeah. The next morning, while Dennis was at work, he drove to a phone booth. He was like on his break of some sort. And he drove to a phone booth to call the police to report the murder because he was just too excited for Nancy's body to be found.
Ew.
He masked his voice and said, quote, like, they're like, hello, 911. Yes, you will find homicide at 843 South Pershing, Nancy Fox. And then he like hung up the phone, but he didn't actually hang up the phone. He like left the phone off the hook and police like traced the phone call, but of course he was long gone, but you know, he's still a moron. The police then went to Nancy's home and obviously found her body. Nobody was able to identify the voice on the phone call, and in January 1978, Dennis sent his poem Shirley Locks to the Wichita Eagle. No one really knew the meaning behind the poem because they did not know that he was responsible for the death of Shirley.
Mm-hmm.
So the newspapers were like,
cool.
What? It took them like, I think a few days, it took them a couple of days to be like, oh, they're all linked. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Okay.
And he sent a letter to KAKE TV, Cake, which was like a local news station. And in the letter, he talked about killing the Oteros, Nancy Fox, and Shirley Vian. He also talked about an unidentified kill, which is now known to be Catherine Bright.
Okay.
He included a drawing of a woman bound and gagged and the poem, O Death to Nancy. O Death to Nancy, what is this that I can see? Cold icy hands taking hold of me. For death has come, you all can see. Hell has opened its gates to trick me. O Death, Can't you spare me over another year? I'll stuff your jaws till you can't talk. I'll blind your legs till you can't walk. I'll tie your hands till you can't make a stand. And finally, I'll close your eyes so you can't see. I'll bring sexual death onto you for me.
It's a no from me.
He then signed the letter BTK with his signature, which, if you don't know, is the T and then the B to make it look like boobs.
It's not. It's not.
I swear Z's. BTK signature. I swear Z's.
Oh, I got it.
Did you find it?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, he does like the B to look like boobs, and then the T and K, and the T and K are used to make it look like the body of a person. No. And he draws nipples. He draws nipples, everybody.
Yeah. Oh, he's sure to add in that detail.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No.
The police didn't have much of a choice after this, and they had to go on public. They had to go public with the news that there was a serial killer loose in Wichita. Naturally, they were trying to hold on to it because, you know, first of all, you don't want like mass hysteria. And then second of all, they're trying to keep as much information close to their chest as possible so that it's easier to catch this man.
And clearly this guy wants the recognition, so...
Yeah, so they're like also trying to keep that from him to make him mad so that he'll make a mistake.
Yeah.
They told people to be extra careful and to lock their doors. Women began checking their phones daily for dial tones because he was known for cutting the phone lines. And they were also being like, we need home alarms. And
yeah.
Dennis Lynn was like, I got you covered. Yep.
Of course.
In June 1978, Paula gave birth to the couple's second child, their daughter, Carrie. Then in April 1979, Dennis broke into the home of Anna Williams, 63. He waited at her house for hours, but she never came home. Dennis stole some of her belongings and left. And when Anna did eventually get home, she saw, naturally, someone broke into her house, so she called 911. And, you know, made a report. Then in June, she received a package that was addressed to her late husband. He had been dead like a year at this stage.
Okay.
So like, she's like, well, this is weird. There was a drawing of women. There was drawings of women bound and gagged, along with a poem. This is probably one of his best.
Okay.
Oh, Anna, why didn't you appear? It was the perfect plan of divert pleasure, so bold on that spring night. My inner feeling hot with perpension, the new awakening season. Warm, wet with inner fear and rapture. My pleasure of entanglement, like new vines at night. Oh, Anna, why didn't you appear? Nice drop of fear, fresh spring rain would roll down from your nakedness to send a lofty fever that burns within. In the small world of longing fear, rapture, and desperation, the game we play fall on devil ears. Fantasies spring forth, mounts to storm fury. Oh, Anna, why didn't you appear? Alone now in another time span, I lay with sweet enraptured garments across my private thoughts. Fate of spring, moist grass, clean before the sun, enslaved with control. Warmed wind scenting the air, sunlight sparkle, tears and eyes so deep and clear. Alone again, I throw in past memory of mirrors and ponder why for number 8 was not. Oh, Anna, why didn't you appear?
Yeah, Anna. No, but in all seriousness, what would you do if you had received that package? And why was it addressed to the husband?
Because he's a freak, and I would have done what this woman would done, to be honest. The next day, Dennis sent a similar package to KAKE TV, and Anna moved soon after she received her package.
Yeah.
Girly.
I would have too.
Sames.
Mm-hmm.
It left her feeling completely unsafe and absolutely traumatized. Now,
of course,
it's actually thought that Dennis had seen her granddaughter, Rebecca, who was 24, as she would come and visit Anna quite regularly. And she'd often, like, I think she had like a key to the house. So she just, like, you know, would walk in. And he thought mm-hmm. that Rebecca was Anna.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, he never said like, oh yeah, I did plan on killing her, or no, I didn't. But people, Anna was just older than his normal,
mm-hmm.
normal demographic.
Yeah.
You will. So that's why they assumed that he must have gotten them mixed up, maybe. I don't know. In 1983, Brian, Dennis's son, became a Cub Scout, and soon after, Dennis became a scout leader. He also became more active in his church. Then in 1984, Dennis noticed one of his neighbors, Marine Hedge, 53, and he became obsessed with her. Then on April 26, 1985, while at a Boy Scout campout, he parked his car out of the way with his hit kit inside it so that he was able to leave the camp unnoticed. He told everyone that he had a massive migraine and that he needed to go to bed early to have a lie down.
You know what? I'm annoyed about that, because when I get a migraine, I'm like, I'm serious about it, okay? It fucking, that shit hurts. It hurts like fucking hell. So don't you ever use a migraine to just get out of something, you dicks.
Megan's very passionate about migraines.
I am, okay? Because they are so painful.
You know, to be fair, like, a migraine is not it. But he's like, I'm going to migraine, go lay down. So Dennis is in his tent. He gets changed and he sneaks off to his car, and then he drives to a bowling alley. Dennis then pretends to bowl as sort of an alibi, and then he spilled beer all down his clothes and face so that it would give off the appearance that he was drunk. Why he did this, I don't know. I feel like it's extremely unnecessary.
Yeah, that was completely unnecessary, but Miss Lynn is always extra.
Dennis then called a cab to bring him into the neighbourhood where he and Marine lived. So he just gets dropped off in the neighborhood. He gets dropped off nowhere mm-hmm. near his house or her house or anything like that, just at the neighbor. He's just like, yeah, here's fine.
Okay.
He then goes to Marine's house. He went around to the back of the house. He cut her phone lines. He broke in and he hid. Marine's not home yet. So, you know, he's like, perfect, just in time. However, just as he,
what's
like...
What's your name? Sorry, Marine.
Yeah. It's M-A-R-I-N-E. Marine? I think I called her Marianne a little bit back now. I apologize.
Hey, Gran, I was like, no, I was like, Marine? Like, some Marine isn't like the sea?
Yeah. Apparently.
There you go.
Just as he found his, like, hiding spot, Marine pulled up with a male friend. Dennis hid in a closet in one of the bedrooms, and he stayed there until Marine's friend left. He waited for Marine to go to bed and fall asleep before he snuck out of the closet and he turned on her bathroom light.
No.
This woke her, naturally, and she began to scream. Mm-hmm. Dennis jumped on top of her in the bed and began strangling her, killing her. Can you imagine?
Just, you know your bathroom light is on, and then all of a sudden this fucking ugly ass dude is on top of you. I just can't imagine it. No, yeah. And I don't want to.
No. Dennis then stripped her, tied her up, and placed her on a blanket so he could take pictures of her. When he was done, he put Marine in the trunk of her car, brought her to his local church. He then posed Marine's body inside the church for photos. Quote, I tied her up in different positions and took pictures. I did not use the altar. I was bad and disturbed, but I still had respect for some items in God's house.
I still have respect. Do you, though? Do you?
No.
When he was finished, he then dumped Maureen's body in a ditch that was full of trash.
Wow.
Yep. Dennis then cleaned the church and drove Maureen's car to the bowling alley to collect his car. Dennis made it back to camp without anyone even knowing he was gone.
Makes me so mad.
All of that. And nobody noticed he was gone. It kind of just shows that nobody really cared.
No. They probably did notice he was gone, but just didn't give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. They had a great time. You know when that person that's always around that always brings you down, it like leaves for a little bit and you just like oh, and everybody's vibing, chilling.
I
yeah.
I want the world to know. Yep. Now, Dennis did not call the police this time because Maureen was his neighbour and he did not want suspicion to fall on him. So this actually meant that Maureen's male friend that had spent the evening with her became the main suspect for a long, long time.
Okay, that's a bit rude considering everything that's been going on.
BTK had been taking credit in one way or another. So like he wrote the letter about the Otero murders and then he called about Nancy Fox, and then he wrote a letter about Shirley Vian and all that.
Mm-hmm.
He did not mention. He was like, who's that lady? I don't know.
Because
he was like, shit, she's my neighbor. Like, I'm too close to home. Too close to home.
Didn't think this one through, did you?
No. So that's why the police were like, was it you? And the poor friend was like, no, my God, I can't believe she's dead. And they were like, it was you.
Yeah, no.
In September 1986, Dennis found his next victim, Vicky Virgil, 28. On September 16th, Dennis dressed as a telephone repairman during his lunch break at work.
Wow.
He knocked on the door and told Vicky that he needed to check the phone lines, and Vicky just let him in. Vicky was like, oh yeah, okay, no problem, come on in, sure thing, this way.
Mm-hmm.
Vicky was home alone with her two-year-old daughter and was who was playing in a playpen. He went over to the phone and pretended to like do something for a few minutes with it. And when Vicky turned away, Dennis took out his gun and told her that he was going to tie her up. Vicky began to cry and told Dennis her husband was coming home for lunch and that he would be arriving soon, which was not a lie. He brought Vicky to the back room. He tied her up, but Vicky began to fight him. She scratched him on his nose. Good woman, get some DNA under them fingertips.
Yep.
And Dennis ended up being successful in trying to tie her up, and then he proceeded to strangle her. He then undressed her and took photos of her. Dennis left before Vicky's husband got home, who, when he arrived home, he found his wife and called 911.
And the two-year-old is just there, like,
just chilling
in the playpen.
Yeah, not knowing what's going on. Vicky was pronounced dead soon after arriving at the hospital. Dennis, again, didn't seek credit for this murder, and Vicky's husband became the prime suspect in that investigation for a very long period of time. Which, again, is just
rude. Why didn't he take credit?
I don't know why he didn't take credit for her. I think he kind of was starting to be like, if I take credit too many times, like, they're gonna catch me.
Yeah.
Where it'll take them longer to figure out that it was me that done it.
Mm-hmm.
In 1988, Dennis lost his job at the security company.
I wonder why.
He decided he wanted to join the police force after this. But the police department were like, no.
No, thank you.
I don't think they had, like, they just didn't want him. It's not because he, like, failed, like, the exam or anything like that. They just were like, no.
Bad vibes off this guy.
Yeah, pretty much. Dennis was angry that his BTK murders were not getting the attention that they deserved outside of Wichita. And then Dennis got himself a job at the US Census Bureau, which meant that he had to travel a lot. While he was away for work, he would partake in his self-bondage and autoerotic asphyxiation, which is most of those photos that we just witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
His job at the Census Bureau was only temporary, and it ended. When it ended, he found his next victim, Dolores Davis, 62. In January 1991, the Scouts were having their annual Dead of Winter campout, and Dennis was once again like chaperone for it, like he was at the other campout. Dennis arrived early to set up, and when everyone else arrived, he made an excuse that he had to go into town for something. He then went to his parents' house because they were away at the time, and he changed his clothes and he drove close to Dolores' home. He arrived at the house at around 11 p.m. and he waited for her to go to bed. He then threw a cinder block through her glass door at the back of the house, which naturally shocked the shit out of Dolores.
Of course.
She actually ran outside because she thought that maybe Dennis had hit her, like the smash was that loud. She thought that he had hit her home with his car.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He told her that he was a wanted man and he just needed money and a car. He told her that he needed to tie her up, which she was like, okay. He eventually got her in the bedroom, tied her hands and feet together while she lay on her belly. Dennis then strangled Dolores while she begged him to stop. Dolores told him that she had a friend coming over and which threw him ways off. This was a lie. She was not expecting anybody.
Okay.
Dennis panicked and thought that he didn't have enough time to take his beloved photos. So, Dennis being a top-notch guy, you know, he put Dolores in the trunk of her car and he drove her to a lake near Park City. This is where Dennis dumped Dolores' body. Dennis then realized that he had left his gun at Dolores' home. So he went back to get the gun and cleaned the car and threw the keys on the roof of her house. He then went back to her body and moved it underneath to like a bridge-like area, which is where he had planned on bringing her originally.
Oh, so it's home because he's a fucking bridge troll.
Yeah, pretty much. This is basically where he wanted to take the photo. He was like, oh my God, the photos here will look so good.
Ugh.
Yep. He then went back to Scamp Couch, and on the second night, he faked a head.
Scamp Couch.
Scamp Couch. It's been a long day, you guys. He then went back to Scout Camp, and on the second night, he faked a headache as a reason to go into town for medication, and that's when he returned to Dolores' body so he could take photos.
Ew.
Yeah. Then in May 1991, only 4 months after murdering Dolores, he was hired by Park City as a compliance officer and animal control. Some people found him friendly and efficient, but most found him overzealous and petty.
Absolutely. I've read it. I think I read it AMA about this, like somebody that owned a dog that he was a dick to over, and he was just a massive dick.
Yeah, he apparently would write citations if a lawn exceeded like 6-inch grass height.
And I'm just imagining him there, like Dwight from The Office on the ground with the ruler, like,
can't you?
6¼ inches.
Cut your grass. Yeah. Yep. So the job basically made him feel like the police officer that he could not be.
Mm-hmm.
And in the mid-90s, Dennis said that he was just too busy with his wife, his kids. He loved his job. Like, the sensation for killing had gone away for the most part. You know, he was like, don't really need to. Okay. He would still stalk or troll women, but he didn't feel the need to kill any of them. Dennis and BTK went silent. Annoying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bummer.
Very.
So before I continue, we're just going to take a quick ad break. And we're back. In January 2004, the Wichita Eagle released an article on BTK that was as detailed as possible and talked about the 30th anniversary of the Otero murders. Dennis was beyond happy when he read the article. He was like, oh my god, I'm fucking famous! In March 2004, he sent a letter to the writer of the article. In the letter, he also included a photo of Vicky Vergler and a copy of her missing driver's license. The name on the letter was Bill Thomas Kilman, and he signed it with his signature BTK symbol. The writer forwarded the letter onto the FBI, who confirmed that it was indeed like an authentic BTK letter. Mm-hmm. The media then got wind that BTK was back, and the storyline was almost everywhere. Then on May 4th, 2004, Dennis sent another letter, this time to KAKE TV. He sent them a puzzle, which he had created because he wanted to be the Zodiac, apparently. But nobody, like, it didn't make sense. Nobody, like, it would only make sense to him because he created it. Like, he didn't give any clues as to, like, I know, like, the Zodiacs is hard to do, but, like, he used, like, a cipher and shit to create it. Like, Dennis just made this up himself.
For the lols, like, he's just...
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so nobody would have been able to solve it because... Like,
it didn't make sense at all.
No. They sent it on to the FBI again, and they... Once again, we're like, yep, this is definitely from BTK himself. And this letter was from Thomas B. Kingman. He's getting creative. In June 2004, a package was found that included a detailed description of the Otero murders, a drawing of Josephine Otero, and an outline of a book, The BTK Story.
No.
Along with chapter names.
Oh my god, no way.
Do you want to hear the chapter names?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. Please.
1. A serial killer is born. 2. Dawn. 3. Fetish. 4. Fantasy world. 5. The search begins. 6. BTK's haunts. 7. PJs. 8. MOID ruse. 9. Hits. 10. Treasured memories. 11. Final curtain call. 12. Dusk. And 13. Will there be more?
You're missing where I got caught like the biggest stupid idiot that's ever been seen on this planet Earth. You're missing that chapter.
So where does that fit in? Does that fit into the will there be more? Because the answer is no. Then in July, a package was found at a local library. The letter contained a story that BTK was the one responsible for the death of a local 19-year-old boy, Jake Allen. Now, it was at the time... Police were unsure if Jake had committed suicide or if he had been murdered. So then when they got this letter, they were like, oh, okay, BTK killed him. But then it was confirmed that, no, Dennis just made it all up and Jake Allen did actually, in fact, commit suicide. He just wanted to scramble around with the police. He just wanted them to scramble at his beck and call.
Right, okay.
Like, fucking rude.
Somebody's harboring bad feelings towards the police.
You won't let me
towards
join
everybody.
You won't let me join your force, you bitches.
And I can't even cry to my mom about it.
Because she hates me. She's probably dead at this stage, to be fair, but you know.
Oh, Dorothea, you poor thing.
Then in October 2004, a UPS worker, while picking up packages, came across one of BTK's fieldgrams. That's what he liked to call these letters. He liked to call them fieldgrams.
he's very creative, but in a really bad way, like not in a good way. Like when your child gives you a painting that they've done at school
and it looks like a piece of shit and you're like, oh, wow.
We're going to put it on the fridge, but I am going to take it down in like a day.
Yeah. Yeah. So this field gram consisted of random photos of children he drew bondage on top of.
Oh.
Yeah. And a rough chapter about his early life for chapter 2, Dawn, for the novel that he had, you know, suggested. Most of the information that he gave was false. Like, he exaggerated everything. Obviously, he left out, like, details that would, you know, link, point them in his direction. But he, like, exaggerated how his mother, like, didn't love him, you know, like shit like that. Like, Dennis, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, unnecessary. Dennis then rang KAKE TV with information about the murders. Then in December, he rang in a bomb threat, but that was just so that police would find one of his packages. He left a package, nobody had found it. They were taking too long to find it. So he was like, there's a bomb.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Give me attention.
This package contained a doll that was tied in bondage and the real license of Nancy Fox. So previously he had just been sending photocopies, but this time he sent her actual one. And the story of how he killed her. Then in January 2005, KAKE TV received another letter which asked if a cereal box had been found. And when they found it, inside the cereal box was a Barbie that was posed like Josephine Otero and a note that read, Chapter 9 hits PJ Little Mex 11574, which is the date that he murdered her, the 15th of January 1974.
Right.
But he called it PJ Little Mex because the Oteros were Mexicans. Well, he believes they're Mexican anyway, so they must, well, I assume they are. A few days later, another cereal box was found with a list of women who Dennis had been stalking and also asked if he could send a floppy disk with some things on it to the police.
This is my favorite.
Dennis wanted to know if the floppy disk would be traceable. The police were to put an ad in the newspaper that said, quote, Rex, it will be okay. The police ran the ad.
Yes.
Then in February, Dennis sent a postcard to KAKE TV. Thank you for your quick response to number 7 and number 8. Thank you to the news team for their efforts. Sorry about Susan's and Jeff's colds. Business issue. Tell WPD that I received newspaper tip for a go. Test run soon. Thanks. P.S. May want to use KTV PC etc. code hashtag and letters for me from me for my verification code to you.
I'm confused. What?
Yeah, I don't really get that. I think he's basically being like, he's going to send a test run and they may need to, like, you know, use a verification code to prove that it's from him so that the police and that know it's from him.
Okay.
On February 16th, 2005, KSAS TV received a floppy disk that said, test floppy for WPD review. Now, Dennis sent the floppy disk. Like, created his floppy disk using his church computer. Dennis had recently been given a new title in the church. He was like now the president of the church. So It had his name on it. Through a quick internet search for a Dennis at the, I can't remember the name of the church, at the specific church that they, you know, they found that the church's new president was one Dennis Rader.
Yes. Yes. I love this so much.
Yeah, the floppy disk had like Dennis and then the church's name on it. So all they had to do was put into Google that church and Dennis, and lo and behold, Dennis Rader comes up and it's like, new president.
Fucking idiot.
They were able to gather DNA through Dennis's daughter's medical files, and naturally it all matched and all of that jazz. Mm-hmm. On February 25th, 2005, Dennis was quickly surrounded by police whilst he was on his lunch and was arrested. Dennis then said, "Hello, Mr. Lanver," the lead detective on the BTK case, and he did this because he read that Son of Sam did the same thing when he was caught.
Oh, no. No, he didn't. He said, "Thank God you're here."
No.
Oh, no. I'm thinking of Richard Ramirez.
Yeah. His confession lasted almost 30 hours.
I thought Son of Sam said, "I've been waiting for you," or something like that.
Yeah, I think he said, like, "I've been waiting for you, Mr." And then the name of the lead detective. I can't remember. Yeah. Paula, his wife, filed for a divorce, like, almost immediately. Like,
Go, Paula.
I'd say Gurley was just waiting on an excuse.
She couldn't, yeah, no, if any man, first of all, she is a saint, because if any man had used the term sparky big time around me, divorce, restraining order, move to a new country, no.
No, yeah, yeah. She then sold the house as well, like straight up was like, "I'm not living in this house anymore, like fuck that."
Yeah.
On June 27th, 2005, Dennis had his court hearing where he pleaded guilty, and he had to give description of the crimes that he committed, and it was basically just to show that, like, he did commit these crimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis never once apologized for any of the murders or any of the attacks or any of the harm that he had caused all those years ago, like an asshole. Dennis was sentenced on August 18th, 2005 to 10 consecutive life sentences, meaning it will be 175 years before he's eligible for parole. He is serving his sentence in segregation, which means he is in his cell for 23 hours a day at El Dorado Correctional Facility. Neither one of his children now have a relationship with Dennis. Kerry, his daughter, did write a book about him, which we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Both her and her brother have said that despite what he'd done, he was actually a really good dad. And neither of them or his wife Paula ever once suspected him for committing any of these crimes.
And he wouldn't. Like, he was a good dad from what I've seen, and he wasn't a violent or aggressive man with his family.
Like, when he was at home, like, you wouldn't know that this was the kind of man that he was.
Mm-hmm. It's a different guy altogether. We're still not allowing that.
Oh.
I'm still not allowing, because he's the way he's like, "Oh, it's a different guy. It's different BTK and I'm Dennis." No. Fuck you.
Oh, no. Like, absolutely, like, horrible person. And no matter what he says or does now, does not make up for anything. Okay?
No.
You still murdered a bunch of fucking people for no apparent reason, but to get a spooky big time.
Ew.
Do you know? But I do really, like, his children must find it extremely difficult.
I can imagine, yeah.
Do you know? Mm-hmm. So that has been BTK. It's a super long episode, you guys. I'm very sorry, but I was not doing a two-parter because
I don't think this is the season of two-parters anymore.
But not even, yeah, well, I think I've kind of just accepted they're going to be as long as they're going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I did not want to talk about this man for longer than needed.
Yeah, did not for sure, want and to I didn't want to listen.
He wanted the attention. He, even now, fucking thrives off attention.
He does.
Loves the fact that he is now linked with, like, Ted Bundy and Son of Sam.
Yeah, that's what he wanted.
That's what he wanted. He used to call Ted Bundy Ted of the West Coast.
As if they were on, like, a first name basis. No.
No. They didn't even know each other. Also, a fun little tidbit. After, like, his first or second crime, he then decided that he was going to wear leather gloves because he seen Jack Nicholson wear leather gloves in a movie where he played a killer, where he played, like, a bad guy.
So he's like a magpie, where he goes around, like, picking up all these different things.
Mm, yeah. And, like, he was like, I'm not going to keep souvenirs because that's how all the other serial killers get caught.
And then he kept souvenirs.
He kept souvenirs, but can any of them say that they sent posts to the police with their name on it?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Oh, he's the worst. He's so dumb.
I don't get it because he literally is so dumb. And, like, fumbled his way through so many of the murders. Let us know what you think of Dennis's poetry and how wonderful it's not. So that has been this week's episode, you guys.
Cute. I obviously, you know, he's a piece of shit and he should burn in hell. And I hope he dies a long, sad, painful death.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it was interesting to learn the way he was, to know
what how kind much of
person
a,
he was.
Yeah, to know how much of a fumbling mess of a man he is.
Yeah.
Like, how stupid he actually really is.
He is the disappointment of the serial killer family.
Not only is he the disappointment of the serial killer family, he's the disappointment of his actual family. So, follow us on Twitter at GiveUsMorg for updates on new episodes and such. And follow us on Instagram for the same thing, also at GiveUsMorg. And if you leave us a review, which we always appreciate, you can screenshot it and send it to us and we'll, like, give you a little shout out. We'll be like, hey, everybody, this person's awesome.
Yep.
And also subscribe to us on whatever... I was going to say device.
Platform.
Thank you. Subscribe to us on whatever platform you are listening to us on. We would super appreciate it. Helps us out a whole bunch. You can also check out our website, www.giveusmorg.com, where we have been posting kind of like a blog post version of the episodes.
Yeah.
At the moment, we're like backtracking and trying to get all the ones that we didn't do up. But there's a few of the newer ones up as well. Sometimes when you're listening to a podcast and you're doing something whilst you're listening to it, you miss out on a bunch of information. So, you know, the blog is there for y'all to read.
And to see photos and our sources and everything like that.
And I'm trying to think. Is that everything?
If you would like to see who you're listening to,
you can always check out our own personal Instagrams, which is at MegPyle_ and at Mrs_Neve. And we will see you next week, guys, for another entertaining episode.
Damn right we will. But right now I'm going to go eat a pork chop at 10 p.m.
I'm going to go to bed because I got work in the morning, bitches.
Ooh, enjoy.